everybody loves to go out to eat. But did they ever stop and think what's happening behind the kitchen door? How does that stuff arrive on your plate? How do they decide what to serve? How do they put a restaurant and bakery and food truck and restaurant together these days? We're going to explore all that and more with the man who's been asking those questions for most of his life here. The one and only, the GOAT, greatest of all time right here in Orange County, Chef Pascal.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for the intro.
You bring in the most interesting people. It isn't just great chefs.
We don't know yet if he's a
Well, that's true. I'm guessing.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. But he's talking my favorite topic today, and one that I don't think people talk enough about or think enough about, sweets.
It's not just about sweet.
Okay.
But I have to say, you know, today we're going to talk about the front and the back of the kitchen door.
Like every
door,
operation, you know? Yeah, right.
And because...
He's the front. We're going to talk about...
Our guest is Darius. And Darius Turina.
Turani, okay. Yes.
And him and his wife, Emily. Open we call it a cafe bakery.
Okay.
In where is it?
In Alisa Viejo. Alisa
Viejo.
And I'm going to have you lower your mic just a little bit. Yeah. Get it up a little
and,
high.
And so go. About a bit over 2 years ago, but they do more than pastry. They do a breakfast. They have a breakfast menu. They have a lunch menu, and really. A Mediterranean
holding
style,
it up,
right? Yes, and but we're going to find out how can he manage, or can they manage to, as a state in the presentation on their website. By the way, the bakery is called Saffron, like the condiment saffron. Right. You know, so did you bring up saffron? So
saffron's an unusual flavor to me too. I always like it when it tastes, but I don't know enough about that. So was there some idea behind saffron? Because I think you said Persian. Is that a saffron?
Yeah, it's saffron is a it's from Iran mostly. 90% of saffron comes from Iran. That's where we were. Both my wife and I've been born there. So. That's basically, it's the most expensive. It's actually more expensive in terms of weight than gold. Or
really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's a very expensive spice. Yeah.
And I've had
spice,
saffron.
Actually.
It's a very subtle kind of aromatic spice, but I can't say I see it a lot.
It's more flavor than spice.
Okay.
And so I have to say, you know, just to give them some credit too, saffron is quite popular in Spain. You know, they put saffron in paella. You know,
and the paella, or however you say paella.
Paella.
So I'm familiar with the. Could we call it a condiment, a spice? What is saffron?
It is a spice. Actually, it's the, like I said, it's the most expensive spice in the world, and it's really expensive because it's a very time-consuming, labor-intensive production.
Is it sort of like lavender? It's a little flower?
No,
that comes
up.
I don't know what it looks like.
It's a pistol of a flower.
Okay.
How do you call it? Crocus? It's a crocus.
It's a flower bud.
Just the little pistol, that little center piece with the little powdery stuff on it.
You cannot touch it with your finger. You have to pick it up. With tweezers.
You really do?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's why you have to collect a lot. You have to plant like thousands of these flowers.
Many, many thousands and millions.
To have a few ounces of saffron.
Yeah.
Wow.
And but 1 ounce of the saffron is about 33 grams. You can go a long way with that.
So a little bit goes a long way.
Yeah.
It does.
But it's probably for a good quality. At least $1,500 an ounce.
What? Yeah. My jaw just quality. Hit the floor and bounced back up. $1,500 an ounce for saffron.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so
probably
just,
even more, actually.
You just answered the question. My Midwestern mom that we poke fun at, sorry, Mom, my late mother, who was a typical suburban mom who made hot dogs and hamburgers and frozen food and meatloaf, there was no saffron in our house.
Yeah. So now they do the kind of a downgrade quality saffron powder. And a lot of people say they use saffron, but they use turmeric instead.
Are they similar?
Yeah, no.
They're not similar. The turmeric is something that a lot of like the Indian. Indian spice that they use, and also a lot of Buddhist cultures use turmeric, and then it's also used for like dyeing colors and things like that. So, but saffron is supposed to be a spice that is uplifting, and it's supposed to make you feel happy, and it really does have that effect.
Well, it's uplifting because your wallet is lighter.
Yeah, that as well.
Walk a little lighter. Yeah, exactly.
But it goes a long way. I do have some saffron at home, but and all you need is. It's a few sprinks.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to waste it, put it at the end.
And is that the official measurement, a sprink?
Sprinkle? No, they're sprink. They're all, because there's a little spring.
They're tiny. They're not
spring. Oh, it's literally a spring, like a little bouncy spring.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that was the genesis of the name. That's where the name came from. Do you have lots of saffron items at the Saffron Bakery?
Okay. We have saffron cake. We have saffron tea. We have saffron coffee. We use a lot of saffron for our like chai latte, things like that, of that nature. Yes, and my wife does, Emily does make or use saffron in some of her items, like saffron cheesecake she makes.
A saffron cheesecake. Wow.
Yeah, and then...
that's what he's got to bring next time, because I love cheesecake.
Where is that cheesecake?
Oh, if you love cheesecake, I tell you, we have a to-die-for Basque, San Sebastian Basque
a
cheesecake.
Cheesecake. Never heard of that.
It's just really is to die for. It's so good.
All I've ever seen
it's
is,
delicious.
What's the one, the frozen one that you get in the TV, in the... Mrs. Lee or something. Lee. That's
actually,
the only one I've ever had.
No, the best one you go to the frozen food store.
Yeah.
They have
like Trader Joe's and stuff.
No. The White Fork. White Fork have a very great Basque cheesecake from San Sebastian, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't know there's such
a thing. Our customers love our San Sebastian Basque cheesecake. Now, the saffron cheesecake that she makes is also a Basque cheesecake, but, with using the saffron.
All right, we've got to go down that rabbit hole for 2 minutes here. When I came to California, tons of ethnicities here. Tons of people from around. It really is the melting pot of America.
It really is.
If America is a melting pot, this is the center of the melting pot, Southern California.
Especially in food,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. You go up and down here in Orange County, you drive to any shopping center, and you'll see a Turkish restaurant, a Persian restaurant, an Italian restaurant, a Mexican restaurant, a Greek restaurant, anything and everything you can find here. So one of the things I found here when I came to Orange County that I didn't ever even knew was on the map was Basque.
Yeah.
And so I did, I used to own a bar out in Chino, and that's sheep country and dairy country out there, and apparently Basque, a lot of them are sheep farmers, and so huge Basque population in Bakersfield and Chino and area. Had to learn about Basque cooking and thing. It's a unique group of people that trace themselves back to nothing. They're one of these orphan languages. It's so old, they can't see them related
on
anything else.
On a side note, my DNA... I'm sorry. My DNA is 68% Basque.
You really? See? All the time we've known you.
I'm a bon vivant.
Bon vivant.
Yeah, so that's Basque, why he's a great chef.
The Basque area sits on the border between France and Spain, up in the mountains there, the Pyrenees. And apparently, they trace this language so far back that it's not related to anything. It's one of the original...
It's a language.
Yeah.
It's not a dialect. It's a language.
It's a language. But other languages, French is from... Latin or related to Italian or Spanish. Or this one's related to nothing.
But I don't want to go too far.
I know.
But the Basque culture is really very special.
It is. It's very, very unique. Yeah. And there's a lot of it here in Southern California. So you've got a Basque cheesecake. I never knew there was such a thing.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's very light and fluffy, and it's very easy to eat, and it's just delicious. We the thing about our products, our bakery, and our cafe is that even our sweets, they're not, like, we don't use ton of sugar. We just put enough so that you get to taste everything in your pastry in your whatever you select to eat, and so it just doesn't
overwhelm you
with just sugar, or which unfortunately in the U.S. a lot of bakeries just puts ton of sugar in there.
Sugar on top of sugar on top of sugar.
We do not do that. It is really it's just delightful, and it's very light. And when you eat it, you get to taste everything.
So I got to ask the question.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down another rabbit hole, but I think this one's worthwhile. I love sweets. My whole family, my aunt, and everybody loves sweets.
Yeah.
Today, when I go out, for the last 20 years, I go out to dinner, nice place, cheap place, fast place. Nobody eats dessert. Nobody eats sweets. My wife won't. My daughter won't. My son-in-law won't. My grandkids won't. Sweets have disappeared. And that used to be the pièce de résistance, the final moment you go to a French restaurant and you have some big piece of pastry or something wonderful that the French excel at doing pastries and sweets.
It's really weird because people don't eat sweets in a restaurant, but they go to some chain of coffee house, and they drink something sweet most of the time.
That's true. They all want sweetened things. Yeah. So what is it about sweets? Is it because we thought sugar's no good for us, or we woke up, or we think it's fattening, or it's just... I don't know anybody that eats sweets anymore, that eats cakes, pies, pastries, all the stuff that I just adore.
Yeah, I don't know about people not eating it, but I do know that we just put it in such a way that when people eat it, the sugar doesn't overwhelm you whatsoever. It just, you just get to taste all the ingredients that go in.
When we look at your menu, so there's more than sweets.
Yeah, okay. Clearly, it's
you
a cafe.
Great, right. It's more all over in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, it is a Mediterranean.
Yeah, you have some sandwich with mozzarella and tomato.
Right, correct.
More Italian, but also you cannot resist. I'm sure when you have a sandwich there or a panini, because you look at the showcase and you see the rolls.
In the showcase with all those
beautiful
things,
pastry. I have a couple of pictures here. Unbelievable. And you know, they on the bread. Look at the bread.
Hold
look
it up that. To the camera there. Yes,
look at the bread. Wow. This is a French sourdough bowl. It's unbelievable.
So I guess my question is to both of you. You both grew up in a culture that had breads and sweets and pastries and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Americans have moved away from that. How's been the response for the last 2 years as you bring this to Americans, many of whom have never tasted, not to forget Bass cheesecake, any cheesecake or anything anymore? They're not buying the pastries and sweets and all the stuff, and yet clearly you're successful. Look at the beauty of some of that stuff you've got there. Why bring this back, and what's the reaction been in Lisa Viejo as you're reintroducing sweets into tempting treats here?
Well, Chef Pascal said, we're not just about sweets. We do have great breakfast and lunch. But if we're going to talk about our sweets, as I discussed before, we don't like inundated with just sugar. We try to.
So maybe you should come up with another name that doesn't sound, because sweet sounds overwhelming for most people.
Well, you know, if you use an ingredient like a fig or date, something like that, apricot, and you bring that into a pastry, you don't need to add much sugar.
Exactly, because there's natural sweetness to it.
Yes. We also do gluten-free cookies, believe it or not.
That was the other thing I was going to ask, because people are worried about
But it has to be with order, because, you know, when we make it, we just don't know how much request there's going to be for it, but I mean, people come in and they say, oh, I want to gluten-free and we want it for the such and such date, we can definitely do that. We got some great Persian cookies that are gluten-free, believe it or not, of all things, but which they use almond flour, they use you know, my wife uses like rice flour or different kinds of flour for it instead of just like regular flour.
Now there's a huge Persian population in Southern
California. There is, Nalisa too.
So was that your intent, to serve that community first?
Not really. We were, of course, we want to serve our Persian community. We want to, there are many things that's our products that's been inspired by the Persian way of doing things.
Like what?
Okay, for example, for our eclair or our cream puffs.
Two things. I haven't had an eclair or a cream puff in years. I used to adore those. Again, hard to find, hard to source.
And not too bright. But
oh, we also have Dubai chocolate too, which is phenomenal. But I mean, it's a Dubai chocolate cookie. We make that.
I've heard that for my daughter, who's Hispanic. I adopted a girl from Mexico. She loves Dubai chocolate. She was telling me all about. I never heard of Dubai chocolate.
Yeah, it's great. It's got canafe.
But you can tell it talk about the crème.
What was the other one?
Chou à la crème.
Cream puff. And then Napoleon. We make great Napoleon.
Those are French.
Yeah,
I know.
There's a big French influence. In your country.
In my country, yes, correct. That is correct.
Because, you know,
during the time of the Shah, the previous the
administration.
Yeah.
And we're going to, away from all the other stuff that's going on today here.
No, what I'm saying, during that time, he really was very, there was a lot of French influence.
Right.
But Iranians also brought their own influences to some of these things. And that's why. Like, for example, our Napoleon, he's got a slight the rose water, which you will not find in the French Napoleon. Okay. Our cream puffs.
And what is a Napoleon, for those that don't even know it? I know there's types of pastries.
Okay. It's like
layers of puff pastry.
Yeah, layers of puff pastry.
And with some pastry cream in between.
Yes.
But you can flavor the pastry cream, and then you have a beautiful kind of brown melt. Sugar on the top.
Yeah, we actually use pistachio on top. Oh, that's a Persian.
That's a Persian touch.
That's a Persian touch. Pistachio. For example, and then that would be one example. Our regular piece of cake that people get, you know, sliced cake. It's really light, very easy to eat. When you eat it, you're not gonna just.
And most cake to me is very. We just had a birthday in my household, so we went and bought a cake at Albertsons or something. And we have two
people
little bites.
Can't eat it.
But
we make it in such a way that not only you eat one piece, you want more. Mm. You come back for a second and third piece.
Talking about more, I've been invited to some Persian New Year.
Yeah, which is coming up, by the way.
Yeah,
Persian New Year. Yeah,
and. It's a feast.
There's
a spread. Yes, and on beside the tea and the samovar, the whole thing.
Extravaganza.
Because this is a big tea service. But it's all our thing everywhere on the house. Whoever invites you make all kind of food. It's like a mini.
They go all out.
Oh, yeah. All out.
It's called Hafsin. It's a table with like seven different things that they put there.
And the beautiful thing is that friends and neighbors are welcome. They just show up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. You don't have to say
anything. And when is Persian New Year?
It's March 21st, 2021.
Oh, okay. So right around the corner.
Every year.
Because I know over at the park here in Irvine, don't they have a Mason Park or someplace, they have a big Persian festival and Persian things. Anyway. All right, so again, I know so little about Persian food. I know so little about classic French pastries.
So give us maybe the two or the three most favorite pastries.
At your store?
At my store, I would say our almond croissant, believe it or not, our pistachio croissant. And then we have these are just like the and more in the morning kind of items that people get, and then our cinnamon roll of all things, which is it's made with our croissant dough, and then we put this wonderful icing on top, which we melted, and
I'm gonna ask Chef a question here. What makes and do you say croissant like I say in America?
Croissant.
There's just something, a little sound in there.
Yeah.
A croissant. What makes a great croissant? Because I went to New Orleans once.
Yeah.
I went to some French bakery. People lined up around the block, not just for the breads that you all are famous for, but the croissants.
The butter.
And the butter. Yeah.
You have to have good butter.
And I was amazed. I'd never tasted light, puffy pastries.
Does your wife make the croissant dough? Also,
she does, yes.
Oh,
that's a lot of work.
It is a lot
because you have to have a laminator.
Yeah,
you have to laminate
the many laminations. Like then you have to put it in the freezer.
So how do you get it so light and crispy and fluffy? It's fluffy and delicate.
Like Chef said, it's the butter. We use French butter. It's called Signy Sainte-Marie.
Yeah,
It's a number one butter in the world for lamination, for great
pastries.
You can't
go to Albertson's and get that. Yeah.
No, there's a few stores you're gonna find that there. Make it. The same with the flour. You have flour from Brittany or from the Alps area and the south.
So if you source the right elements and you do it by hand, you get this incredibly light, puffy pastry.
Well, it's a lot of work. You know, if you do it by hand, you have to roll on.
You can't do it by hand. No. We have to use a
laminar.
Laminate, yeah. I mean, it's a sheeter, we call it.
A sheeter, okay.
Yeah, so it just sheets it.
So you're not there with a rolling pin.
And then you can't do that.
And then you fold it, you put the butter in the middle, and you laminate again, and you let it rest. You have to be patient.
Yeah,
in because the ice, you do it that like 4 or 5 times, depending on
many
times you want to do it.
And so it's layer after layer after layer after layer of this gorgeous
layers
lamination.
Layers of love.
Yes. Yeah. And then also there's this butter that Chef mentioned, and we use, it's the Signy Saint-Marc from France. You know, when you get great quality items. Mm-hmm. Like our flour is organic flour from Central Milling Company in Utah. It's not from France, but it's from it's in the U.S.
It's not the bleached flour.
No, but it's
not
just really
flour,
good high quality butter. Flour that we use. So when you get the right ingredients and you put a lot of effort and love into it, then you get this wonderfully looking
which
pastry.
Is something we again to start the conversation. I didn't grow up with, and most people don't have any experience with.
Exactly.
Here in this country.
Well, it's very rare.
Right.
And even a great bakery here in Southern California.
Not many.
Make everything from scratch.
Yeah.
Right? We do make everything
and
from scratch.
The thing is, Loki, he has his wife, the pastry chef.
So let's talk about
that. She works overnight.
She really knows how to. She's a real pastry chef.
Yes.
I mean,
this
is too many chefs.
And baker too. She baking bread and pastry chef is.
Let's talk about this distinction because we've had people come in here, really fine dining, classical French restaurant. Uh-huh. There was a pastry chef somewhere who just specialized in that, and it was special training, special schools. Yeah. In fact, you had somebody here that went to a couple of schools in France. Yeah. It wasn't just a chef that said, all right, you make the pastries today. There was a specialty for that. As restaurants have shrunk in size and scope and gone back to comfort food, I don't think there are too many pastry chefs in too many restaurants anymore. But your wife is a real trained pastry chef?
Yes, she is. She got most of her training in Iran, but she also got some training, I think it was like 6 months to a year in Turkey. Okay. I encouraged her to get a lot of experience making sourdough bread, which she did in Turkey, and besides that, all the different types of bread in Turkey. But she also
the pictures here.
What's that?
He keeps trying to every time you say it, he looks for another picture here.
But also, she makes
sourdough
ciabatta.
Right there.
She makes different types of bread.
You got this off the website, so if we went to the website, because it's hard to see it on the camera here.
Picture.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so that's her.
That's her thing.
That's her thing. She believe it or not, she started two different bakeries in Iran.
Really?
One was with herself and her sister, Caramel Bakery, and then afterwards she started another one with her son. But that's more like a cafe bakery, like what we're doing now, which not only it has sweets, but also has great breakfast and lunch and dinner as well.
Talk about the European cafe concept. You go to Europe, you go to France, and it's just the streets are lined with little cafes. You sit outside and have a little latte, or you go to Turkey and you have a little...
Which we have that too, by the way.
These cups and you sit up...
Turkish coffee.
Yes, we have Turkish.
Very different.
But there's a common culture throughout... Yeah. Europe and that whole Middle East of sitting outside, sipping coffees, teas, and having little
same
pastries.
Same thing in the Persian culture. You know, you got to have maybe in the afternoon, almost like tea time. You know?
I don't. Again, I don't think that's permeated much of American culture. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but a cafe to us is just to go get breakfast.
Well, here you get a power bar.
A power bar, right.
Yeah,
and you get in the car and you go, right.
That's it, you know. Processed food. You know?
So you're bringing back something again, which I think is what's so special about what you're doing that I can't see a lot of here in Southern California.
Yes, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. And people may say, sounds like there's a lot of butter, a lot of sweet, but a little piece of pastry like this with natural, organic fresh
no preservatives.
Right. It's so...
And no bleached flour and all the other stuff.
So much better than the power bar that say, oh, it's an healthy bar. No,
that's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point to make, because we think somehow we've convinced ourselves that that bar, which is processed and has all these preservatives that can sit on the moon for a month without deteriorating.
Look at the... In the back of the
The BHT package. Red dye number 6 and all the other stuff.
But you know, honestly though, I mean, it's not just the sweets. No, we also have great coffee. We use organic coffee, Colombian organic coffee, and you get, you know, something that I can drink all day long. It does not upset my stomach. Hmm. Where I can some famous brands that you go drink one cup and it starts hurting you. Ours is not that
Don't
way.
Don't say any name.
No. I do not bring any names. No. But I mean, what we also use a great Italian brand, Lavazza coffee, for our espresso. I use Turkish coffee from Turkey.
Which is supposed to be very strong.
It's actually very easy to drink, easier than a shot of espresso, believe it or not. It's it's partly because I put some really nice things in there, spices that very light. So that it's very, very easy to drink. But besides our Turkish coffee, we make kombucha, and we homemade kombucha. We make
homemade kombucha.
Kombucha,
I didn't know you could make homemade kombucha. I just see it in the store.
Yeah,
you know,
no, we do
Trader
make
Joe's
it. It's very easy. It's not difficult. But I mean, we do make it, and it's wonderful.
And explain to people what kombucha is if they haven't. If the three people don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's a fermented a tea. And then we also use organic fruits in there, you know, or fruit juice. And so it is supposed to be so healthy.
I've had kombucha beers. I've seen more and more kombucha beers.
Yeah, because it's got a little bit of alcohol in it. But it's if you want, you can increase the alcohol. But we don't do that. There's no alcohol in ours. I mean, it's a small, less than 1%. But we make kefir, or kefir, as they say in the U.S.,
it's homemade liquid yogurt.
Yeah, I mean, these are the healthiest drinks you can find anywhere. Our chai latte, we use the best, really, the absolute best ingredients in there. You drink it, you feel like you're in India.
Is it hard to get just everyday suburban Americans from Aliso Viejo, what a classic suburban area here, you know, tracts of homes, like I live in, and we all live in here in Southern California. Is it hard to get them to walk into? I bet once they come in the door, they can't wait to come back or tell people.
Yeah, I mean, they love it. We get five star review after review after review, same thing, and then people love that. It's great, and they're like so excited about, you know, what we're doing, and we're a small mom and pop kind of a
bakery.
This
is why
bakery.
I invite Darren.
I'm glad you did
to talk about it, because I got recommended to say, Pascal, go check it out. It's such a great place. And so I said, why don't I meet the owner or the pastry chef first, and then I go.
Right.
I'm
not trying to put words in your mouth, but you might be a little snooty about French pastries and having had the best and all this stuff here.
Especially these days, there's too much challenge of competition on everything to make the best.
Yes.
And I go to places where the croissants are giant. We don't eat giant croissants in France, you know?
A 2 foot, like a Subway sandwich or something.
And for me, I don't know if you do, but I hope you don't take it wrong. We don't make sandwiches with croissants in France either.
You don't?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I thought this croissant was always part of the...
No, croissant is sweet. And we don't mix the sweet on this.
Because I see lots of croissants here, breakfast croissants or sandwich croissants.
We do make it because that's what people have requested. But, you know, I mean, to be on the side note here, I had this morning, I had a customer come in, walk in. He says, my God, you have spoiled us. I'm like, what? Why do you say that? He goes, we just came back from the Bay Area in San Francisco. He goes, we went to they're one of the top bakeries there in the Bay Area, and it doesn't even come close to what you guys are doing. And I'm like, you are spoiling us here. I'm like, oh, thank God. That makes me feel so good.
Yeah, you're going extreme, I can tell.
Yeah.
go all the way.
Yeah, we try to have really high quality stuff.
Sounds like it. Yeah,
yeah, very, we work hard at it to make it. So great deal of
thought,
enjoy.
Intelligence into these products here, and bringing stuff, not just because it's Persian, not just because it's the classic French croissants and bakery items and stuff that we didn't grow up enough with, but to do interesting combinations in a way that I don't think enough Americans have heard of it, really. We think we know what a croissant is. We think we know what a pastry is. Now, what contrast that with when I came to California in the 80s from the Midwest, I was stunned to see donut shops everywhere. Winchell's and what's the other big one, the famous one?
Just drive faster. When you
and they go shop. Crazy over donuts. So why in a world where pastries and sweets, I think, have been in decline in restaurants for a long time here, why go have a gooey donut? I'm not saying donut. I like a donut, too. But I'd much rather have something more creative and that doesn't overwhelm me. And I have one donut. I can't have anything else after it.
Yeah. We don't do donuts. We basically have decided to rule that out of our store. We like to, as I said, you know, we want to minimize the amount of sugar that we use for
cinnamon roll is the closest and the best thing next to donut.
Donuts, where do you see I supplied innovations? There was a big box of donuts sitting. It's still a culture of businesses go get a big. Yeah. And I looked at someone, I go, oh my God, that's sugar on top of sugar on top of sugar.
Well, it's very greasy, it's oily, and it's and unfortunately, the oil that they use is not really a high-quality oil.
And is that why I gave in the other day, I ate one, and the minute I did it, I didn't feel good. I was like,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you have a little beignet, that's okay, but, you know, we have that only once a year in France for some celebration. So you open, you and your wife, the business, almost 3 years. How difficult was it to find the right ingredients you were looking for? Because, you know,
the vendors.
It's not
to source the stuff. Right?
The vendors carrying on all these products.
Well, some of it was trial and error. Some of it was doing a lot of research. Before we even started, we knew some of these things and how to get them. Like the Central Milling Company in Utah, we contacted them and they said, not a problem. Okay. The French butter, we used another brand before, but we weren't so happy with it. So then we switched to the one that I mentioned before.
Okay.
The Belgian chocolates and things like that. I mean, the vendors come and then and they tell you what they have. And then we just, so we.
But the thing is, make it more complicated because you don't go to the okay, a distributor, this is all we carry. You have to do to different suppliers. So you have many more suppliers because you want one product from each one or two.
Right.
So, you know, the big classic suppliers, the U.S. food, and who's the other one?
Cisco.
Cisco. When I had a bar and restaurant, everybody in the world uses Cisco or U.S. Foods.
It's hard to find an organic product specific from
so
them.
I think,
unless you have a mass produce business like wholesalers, then you can buy 50 pound bags of that flour.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But I mean, we use like Parados, which is a great European company. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have all these wonderful things that they make, and it comes from, you know, it's all made fresh, and it's all, they put them together, and it's not inexpensive. It's rather very expensive, but it's really high quality stuff. We use Challenge, local dairy company. That is, it's got great stuff. And so, for some of our milk, some of our whipping creams, we use it for some butters. That
is any of this locally sourced? I mean, do you?
Yeah, that Challenge is.
Do you make your own kefir?
I do.
Oh, wonderful.
I make my own, organic kefir.
What a kefir is. I don't even know.
Is a fermented milk. Yeah. So basically, you just ferment it with these little
peptides?
They're just small, tiny little things, organisms that basically ferment
the
milk.
Like a yeast type of thing?
Yeah, and it's supposed to be wonderful for your system. Yeah, it's supposed to be great.
Probiotics
great for
and stuff.
Yeah,
like
it is very probiotic, and it's amazing.
You do it because most of the yogurt sometimes they even have gelatin and things like that.
Yeah, no, we don't do any of that.
And then So it's still a little bit more soft and liquid, and so you can drink it. It's amazing.
Because more and more, you go to the grocery store, they have milk with probiotics or other things. What am I trying to think of? Organic compounds in the living yeast, yeah. Supposedly.
That's exactly it, right? Yeah. It's basically, a living thing in there that just basically ferments.
Acidophilus.
And it's when you eat it, you drink it, rather, it just, you feel
good.
It. It really makes you feel good. Yeah, believe it or not, it's just amazing.
So how big is this place? It's a little place?
A small place, and we're at 1,200 square foot local bakery and cafe, actually.
And are you in a shopping center?
It's called the Aliso Creek Marketplace.
Okay.
It's at 23411 Aliso Viejo Parkway. And this is our first store here in the U.S.
I thought I threw that in there.
There's a signal there.
First store. Investors, a little light going on here.
Give us a call.
French fries.
No, honestly, though, we got great reviews. People love our products. So it's really great that we get the support. And we also do a lot of charity stuff for our local
city. You're right there off Aliso Parkway. Is that correct?
Aliso.
Near what? I don't go to Aliso. I live in the other side of the freeway. I live like Rancho and Ladera and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So where I don't cross the freeway enough to see what's in Aliso. Give me some of the cross streets where it's at.
Okay, so if you know where the town center is, we're maybe like a few blocks from the town center. We're at the corner of Aliso Viejo Parkway and Aliso Creek Parkway. It's a little hidden place.
A few tables on the front?
We have table inside, and we have a few tables outside.
Why don't we sit outside enough in Southern California? I just think that's part of the joy.
The weather is too nice.
Yeah, right? No, I'll always take that one table outside in a little place.
And but you open breakfast and lunch.
We open 7 a.m. every morning. On Mondays, we are closed. We do need one day off, so we decided to have one day off.
Makes sense.
Monday, we are closed.
And do you close at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon?
Close at 6 p.m.
Oh, I don't think it's a day off for your wife on Monday, because she has to
work
at the door for the sourdough bread.
She works 7 days a week. I work 7 days a week, believe it or not.
And how would you do? So you're the front of the house and she's the back of the house?
She controls the back and I control the front.
And I pay the bills.
Do you have other things you do, or is this your sole business?
I have a daughter and a
that's
family.
That's a
believe it or not, it takes a lot of time.
I don't know if this was a side business for you or your full-time business, if this is something.
No, this is more than
And what did you do before?
24
were you
all, hours.
She was always in restaurant, food, and dining. What did you do before? You're an aerospace engineer or something?
No, I got my MBA from California State University here in Los Angeles. And then I had a doctor's offices that I was doing in Pasadena before this, and then I went back to Iran, met my wife, and I was when I was there in Iran, I was managing my family's farming and whatever we have land and some centers there, so I was managing that. And then I came here. We immigrated from there to the U.S. and then we started this. This store.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and then we do have really great also employees that work there, and they have many years of experience that they've when they joined us.
So I got to stop you right there, because last show we had Chef talking about wine lists. Yeah.
Yes.
And so we had a guy who teaches people and sets up wine lists. And the big problem we all agreed is not just the public doesn't know, the staff doesn't know.
Training,
Yeah.
So how do you teach? If I go into your place, they say, tell me about this. And they go, I don't know. I don't eat that. I've never tried. People like it. They say this is good. That's popular. Yeah. But if they can't describe it to me, how do you sell it?
Yeah. For example, I have a man, that came and he wanted to work because he loves doing, pastries.
Okay.
He came from the tech industry. He was there for, probably like 40 years. He came 40 years at least.
That's why I ask about aerospace, because kiddingly I hear this all the time. My second career is do something fun. My big career was this. But
he came over and he said he wanted, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't have anything in the back, but if you want, you can help me in the front. But eventually I will get you to the back. And he was patient enough, and now he works in the back, and he's my wife's, one of my wife's assistants, and he just loves,
he loves
it,
pastries,
and he loves doing it, and it's one of the things that he brought to us was he meals we order these the berries, the or you know, the wheat berries, yeah. And he meals it right there,
what?
And what it's a, so it's a whole wheat flour bread. And it's fresh. It's done the same day, and it just—it's wonderful. You
so
eat it.
So this leads to the other thing that the chefs always pointed out.
And it's
out
got.
To me.
Oh, I just want to say this.
Yeah.
It has 47 different vitamins and minerals that most of the other flours lack.
So it's called multigrain bread.
Yeah, it's got the whole thing. And
so
it's,
the
it's
chef
great.
Always talks about, because I always bemoan the fact, I don't know if fine dining is in decline, it's too expensive,
right?
People want more comfort food, they're less experimental, on and on and on. And yet ethnic cuisine has exploded, or just kind of the little specialties of Turkish, Persian, all these different cuisines. He said where the explosion in the creativity is still happening is at home. More and more people are cooking at home. Or the people who come in that study at his Saddleback Institute, they don't want a restaurant, they want to be a private chef. More and more people are experimenting at home and trying things.
Because they find out that not every place you go are really reasonable and very intimate about quality.
Yeah.
There's not many places that is just
expensive and maybe not high quality.
So not too many places are dedicated.
You brought in that one
in the menu for the quality like they do.
You brought in that one guy. I forgot his. He had like, I don't know if he worked for the Secret Service or something like that. Something real high tech like that.
Mm-hmm.
Secret. Police, you know, high-end FBI Secret Service, something.
I still don't know. I know.
Yeah, he's very mysterious. Was it the CIA or the Secret? He's very mysterious. But he had a long career in this field, traveled the world, and now he dedicates himself to being really almost a home chef, but at a highest level.
Very detailed.
There is a great market for that, apparently. I've known a few people like that, but...
Your wife do some classes sometime?
That would be fun.
I have encouraged her to do
that.
That
would be fun.
My wife is somewhat of a shy person.
Okay.
I mean, I asked her to come here,
and she said no.
She shied away. She just, her English is not. Let's just say it's not.
Yeah. It can't be any worse.
Not that fluent.
Can't be any worse than the French chef's English over here. No.
You know, if she complaining about what you said today, you say, "Oh, why don't you go next time?"
Yeah,
I would love to meet her.
Yeah, no, she's a really wonderful person.
I think people would love to take classes because again, there is a movement to go back to learn how to cook and bake things. You had, who was my chef at your table for 10, Maria?
Wendy.
I'm sorry, Wendy, and she's from
Bolivia,
and she teaches classes on Bolivian food and cooking and stuff. Because most of us suburban Americans,
and she worked for me, so she knows French cuisine.
There you go.
Yeah.
Most of these today suburbanites like me, middle class or whatever. More and more, we want to experiment at home. We want to learn how to cook at home. We want to learn how to bake bread or make our own beer or do something.
Yeah, so to go back to my point,
right,
that it's safer and healthier to cook and eat at home.
Right.
I'm sorry, I don't want for the business, but you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you had classes, I think people would come. I might come and learn how to do them.
Okay.
Like the guy from the tech industry who came to you and said, I don't need to make money anymore. I want to make passion. I want to make
fun. That's basically what he said. He says, I've done it, but I mean, I love to do this. And so will you please, I'd be very interested in baking. And I said, well, let me just give you a little bit of time and then just see.
You know,
and then now he loves doing
that. Paul will work for food.
I will work for food. We're always talking about it because...
Yeah.
Again, his wife laughs when I say this, but I grew up in a world where food was just processed and fast and Uber delivered.
Unfortunately, which is true. But so we try to give the highest quality, really good, down-to-earth, home kind of style, really good, make you feel kind of good.
But it doesn't have to be just for the Persian community. You cater to that, and you're from that. It's anybody and everybody.
No, it's very actually... very Mediterranean.
It is very Mediterranean.
European.
So how would you describe Mediterranean? You all have an image because you've been there. I've never been to the Mediterranean. Okay, I didn't go to Saint-Tropez or hang out
Think of France, Italy, Turkey, Spain. I mean, all of those, region, even like, you know, the North African area.
Tunisia.
Yeah. I mean, all of that would be Mediterranean.
Greece.
So for somebody like me who hasn't been there, I've only read about it, what would I see? Is it light? Is it because the Mediterranean diet is the ideal diet in the world today? Here, it's lots of oil. It's
they do a very good job to go backward now to clean up things and more reasonable fishing and all.
Lots of fish. Yeah. Olive oils.
You keep saying olive oil. We have one item that is so popular as our ciabatta bread, and it's this light, long bread that we make. It's made with olive oil. Mm-hmm. We made with Clamadia olives. It's got some really great cheddar cheese and cilantro. And so we make and believe it or not, we cannot make enough.
Because that's what I am familiar with.
You see, the ciabatta like this also in southern France. Mm-hmm. They add like black olive into the bread.
Yeah,
black
that's what we do. Olive. Black olives. Black olive. That's what we do. Clamadias, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So good. It's really, really good.
Is that what Clamada olives are? Black olives?
Yeah, they're black olives. Right. Yeah. So that's what we do. And so people love that.
So we're all hooked on this. We're told, we have doctors come in here all the time. We do some doctor shows, Mediterranean diet.
Exactly.
That's what everybody should be eating, exorbitant. Yeah. And I always see oil and olives and fish and I don't know what other ingredients.
You have good honey as well.
Honey,
yes,
yeah.
Very good honey. I mean, we don't, like for most of my coffee drinks, I don't use any sugar. We use, we make our own, for example, syrups, and then we use for our bread, for example, we have 100%, we make our own bread. We make great organic sourdough that is becoming very, very popular. We make great baguettes, French baguettes. Mm-hmm. We make sourdough baguette. We make great white loaves. We make other things that like jalapeno and cheddar. I know that doesn't sound sacrilegious
to him. Yeah.
In the U.S., it's really, really popular.
I see that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, you eat it. If you like spicy, that is just a phenomenal, great sourdough bread that we make, and people love that.
If we want to celebrate
Persian New Year.
Persian New Year. Mm, can we come to your place and you give
us
a little take-home package?
We will definitely have a little table with
what would
Persian
we see?
Because
we had we were doing things for New Year's. We did a special show. I thought that was fun. Yeah. That's when we had Wendy come in. She talked about what's Bolivian New Year. You talked about what you ate in France in New Year. Mm-hmm. None of which we eat here. Any of those dishes we're not familiar with. What would I see it if I went to a Persian New Year's?
Okay, you say it's March 17th.
It's March 21st.
March 17th is it's St. Patrick's Day. That's the Irish me.
That's more like Scotch, whiskey, Irish
not
whiskey.
Not a lot of food there. A lot of drinking.
March 21st.
Yes, March 20 to 21st. That's our New Year. And so what is a good item? I mean, we have these Persian cookies that we have. There are, you know, it's called haftsin, which means seven items they all start with S's. So you'll see, and it looks so beautiful. I mean, it's just so
a lot of cuisines
high-spiriting thing.
Have cookies as a special treat. I don't know, Pat. So, for example, I'm part Polish, and I grew up in Detroit. My father was half Polish, and big Polish population in Detroit and Chicago. That's where they're located. And they have these things called punchkis, I think, and they're like little pastries that they make just for Easter.
Right.
And you have to order them and all this stuff here. And a lot of cultures have, usually for a religious holiday or a New Year's or Christmas or something, have some kind of thing.
A little treat, yes.
A little treat. You were talking about it. What's the little log thing that you were...
A Yule log.
We make that.
I show a picture of your Yule log next year because there are not many places that make
it's
good Yule
amazing.
I want to try your Yule log.
Yeah. But for special events, Chef Pascal talked about, we make, for example, for Thanksgiving, believe it or not, there's a line of people waiting to get our pies. We make great pies.
I love to. All right, Nari, you got to come back because I grew up in the Midwest, so this is all fruit country, apples, cherries,
right.
Wisconsin cherries. We had apples and everything. So I grew up eating fruit pies. That's a huge Midwestern staple. To get a really good fruit pie anymore that isn't dry or processed or whatever, yeah. Something here.
I mean, okay.
Mother and grandmother used to make real fruit pie. That's one thing they did make.
Well, our customers say we take your pie, and then there's like pies from other very famous brands that they bring. Mm-hmm. Nobody touches those. And yours is gone in like minutes.
Are there sweet pies?
They're sweet
pies. Fruit,
yeah.
They're like
fruit pies. Yeah, yeah. Apple pie. Okay. There is like he discussed.
Peach,
like,
apple, yeah, blueberry,
different
cherry.
Different types of pies that we make. But special for the for the holidays.
So you know you're going to be busy on the 20th and the 21st.
Right.
So do people pre-order?
Yes. Yeah. People can order. And place an order to get their cookies and what have you.
Persian pastries.
Yes. Like, for example, for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, for New Year, people place their order. For Mother's Day, they place their order.
I wish I'd known, because we were looking for a place to get a good pie. I'm always, sorry, Mom and Grandma and Aunt, I'm always sort of putting you down the cooking. It was kind of bland. It was kind of boring. It was kind of, you go to the store and it's frozen and we didn't have a lot. But pies... Oh, my goodness. My grandmother and my mother and my aunt would make these, really roll out the dough and crimp the crust and do all that stuff. I don't know what goes into a real pie that makes it so much better.
It's all fresh fruit. Yeah. That's what we use. We use fresh fruit to put inside.
Give me an idea. You know, I was born on Pie Day.
So you were born on Pie Day?
Yeah. Okay. So I need to go to you on Pie Day and get a great pie.
Well, for example, again, I lived in suburbia, but these were all tracks that were built on farms. And so we had 15 apple trees on our property because you get big yards back in the Midwest.
Nice.
And these were all custom. These are all, heirloom trees of varieties of apples you just can't get anywhere else here. Northern Spies and other unique things. And so my dad would water the hell out of them because he wanted the grass to grow green. So we'd get these huge apples and these fresh apples, my mouth watering. And so my mother and other neighbors and my aunts and stuff, this was common. The fruit. Apple trees, orchards, peaches, cherries. Michigan's known for cherries and peaches and all this stuff. All blueberries, all that stuff was prevalent. So they turned that into fruit pies. And that's one that I do miss. And
We also make great pecan pie. We make great pistachio pie, believe it or not.
I've never had pistachio. I've had pecan
pie. Oh, my God.
Pie.
It's so good. It's yummy. And well, we
so
also have
you make
banana.
Quiche. You make quiche.
Too. We also make great French quiche. Fantastic quiche Lorraine. We make a vegetarian quiche.
And what is quiche Lorraine? I know of it, but I don't know what it is. A quiche is an egg dish.
I'll let Pascal describe it.
It is like a savory tart, but it's cooked with cheese, bacon, and
it's Gruyere cheese.
Gruyere
cheese,
and he has like
it's bacon in there.
Pat brisé dough.
Yeah.
So it sits on like a
it's
pie.
It's not a sweet dough. But it's almost
crust.
Just like a tart.
It is a savory item, yeah.
It's a tart, and sometimes you make it that thick.
He calls it a tart. It to me, that's a pie, but a tart is the same. It's that flaky crust.
For me,
crust.
A pie has a top
Oh, a top
crust.
To it. Okay,
this one
that
has
makes
no
sense.
Top crust.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I can get pies, tarts, quiches.
If you order the pies, we don't carry all the time, but before special events, we do have pies. But if you ever want to order pies, we can definitely make them.
I want to try I never even heard of a pistachio pie because I think of only fruit pies or nut pies. again, pecan pie is another great one. But no, I've never had the pies I've had are fruit or cream.
So maybe your wife doesn't give you all the secrets, but. What's inside the pistachio pie?
Yeah.
So the pistachio pie's got fresh pistachios. She uses a cream to make it kind of soft and nice, and she uses also honey and other ingredients that she puts in. It's just delightful when you eat it. Every bite is just heaven.
And she make the own. Is it a It's not a pastry dough. It's a pâte brisée or pie dough.
It's a pie.
Pie dough. If you get really good pie, I don't know if chefs really had good. I'm taking back
really
to the Midwest.
It's really buttery.
It's really buttery. It's very flaky. It's very
exactly.
It can't be too chewy. It can't be too hard. It should be really.
I tried some pies, but they were way too sweet.
Yeah, because what they do is they throw in all the other goop, like the what's the pectins and all that. All this other stuff that's really just it's not. There's very little fruit in it. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, just a sugar compost type of thing.
You know my favorite pie in France baking, and maybe you do that. It's called chausson aux pommes. It's a puff pastry that you fold like an empanadas, and
I love empanadas.
You put apple marmalade inside, and then you bake it, and then you glaze it.
I tried, but I'm telling you, when you cut real apples up, and I don't know what else they add in, there must be some sugar, but you take real fresh fruit right off the tree, blueberries, cherries, apples, peaches, we literally went out and plucked them, and then they would chop them up somehow, and I don't know what else goes into it to make it the pie consistency to it, but it's mostly fresh fruit. Most American pies have very little fresh fruit.
One of my specialty is an upside-down apple tart called tart tatin. And we cook apples, caramelize, put the dough, and we bake it with the dough on the top. And then we flip it when it's ready.
So it's just a reverse pie.
Reverse pie,
exactly.
But our store tries to do we do a lot of different things, but it's not just sweets. It's also, like I said, you know, the Chef Pascal said, we make great breakfast. We have a great Eggs Benedict.
I love Eggs
Benedict. Eggs Benedict, come to our place.
We're going to go on an Eggs Benedict.
We make our own English muffin. We make our own, it's just the cream that they put in there. It's just made fresh every day.
And so many Eggs Benedict, I'm always disappointed because you tell me what's wrong with it. They're just too heavy, too gooey. Too chewy.
Well, same thing if you make a Hollandaise sauce.
The Hollandaise sauce is the most important part.
With good butter on organic eggs.
You can't go wrong with that. No.
And yet, I can go to a million places for breakfast and they all have Eggs
Benedict. Well, you've got to come to Saffron Bakery.
And I stay there and I say, this is an Eggs Benedict.
You have to come there because you're going to love our Eggs Benedict. Oh,
same with the crème pâtissière, pastry cream. You know, it's all about the ingredients.
Even our omelette. I mean, it's not a very complicated thing, but it's just really nicely done, and people just love it and keep ordering it. And we got some great chicken pesto. We make chicken parmesan sandwich. One of my favorite sandwiches is tuna melt. It's
tuna
simple.
Melt. There is an American Midwestern tuna melt.
Exactly. Yeah. I like it spicy, so I asked my chef to kind of make it spicy, so he does that, and he knows what I like. And so it is so good. It's so yummy because we use our own French baguette. It's fresh with organic flour, and it just, you just eat it. Every bite crunchy.
So you got to come back,
so,
and you
got to
bring us some samples.
We're not talking about sliced bread. We're talking about
real French bread.
Wonder sliced bread or whatever here. Get at the store and pop
That's
it
a
down.
Problem. One problem we do have with our bread is that because we don't use preservatives, shelf life is only a few days. So you have to put it in the freezer if you want to keep using it. We make everything here. In our store, and it's fresh too. So people,
tell us again, location, website, social, how do they find you? How do they connect with you?
Okay, the website, it's saffronbakeryoc.com. The social media would be Saffron Bakery at Saffron Bakery OC. The address is 23411 Aliso Viejo Parkway in the city of Aliso Viejo. We open 6 days a week. Monday we are closed, but 6 days a week from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. And people just love our food.
I love that you came in. I love the chef found you. This is what we have this show for, not just to talk about the big famous places, but the finds in Orange County. Mm-hmm. It sounds like this is a find. Thanks for coming in here today.
Thank you, Darius.
Thanks
to your wife for working so hard on delivers such fantastic food.
Chef, thank you, Chef Pascal, for inviting me here. And thank you as well.
You can call me Chef Paul. I'll go with that.
Chef Paul.
I'm not a chef.
But honestly, I'm honored to be here and to talk about.
And thank you for also supporting the Orange County Culinary.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, we shout out. You were at the Table for 10 event.
Yes, I was.
Which
there.
We attended, which was a spectacular event for those.
It was.
We should do 2 seconds on that because we've been touting it for weeks. It's all to support scholarships for the Saddleback College's Culinary Training Institute or whatever it's called, and where Chef Pascal teaches now. And I was blown away. It was at Irvine Marriott. 50 tables, whatever there were, 50 chefs, all from the top places. Your friend Ben Martinique from the Pendry was there and others. And you give the ranch. All these famous restaurants are there. You sat, you ate. They came tableside and cooked with his little staff for 10 people, and it was spectacular. And shout out. Thanks for inviting us and getting us in. And what a spectacular event. And I saw your friend there in the lobby.
I wanted to you to see that there is a great community
there really is.
Of culinary in Orange County on great chefs.
And they're all having a ball. These are guys that put on giant restaurants, famous places, and they're sitting there cooking for 10 people like it's their house.
They're all excited.
Yeah, exactly. Quite a deal. So if you check that out again every year, Table for 10, I think it's tableforten.com. Yeah. Not only do you get to...
.org.
And not only do you get to taste this and sample this, but you see some of the vendors in the lobby beforehand, like this guy.
And you may see me on the 20th at your place.
I think so.
All right.
I hope
Persian,
you come.
I'm coming for some pistachio pie. That's what I'm going to try.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you,
Chef Pascal. It's been an honor to be here. It really is.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Wow. We could go all day. What a cool place. What a cool thing to try. Check it out. We're talking about Saffron Bakery, OC. Now, I'm very hungry now. I think we need a piece of pie here. I think so. Well, a lot more coming each and every week. Tune in. Tell your friends. We're now exploring not just the greatest and the fun and the fines, but what goes into restaurants and bakeries and fine dining and eating here in Orange County as we explore Behind the Kitchen Doors right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.